Hi, I'm Erin Lundy.
And I'm Madeline Walden, and this is
Aquarium of the Podcific,
a podcast brought to you by Aquarium of the Pacific, Southern California's largest aquarium.
Join us as we learn alongside the experts in animal care, conservation, and more. Welcome back to Aquarium of the Podcific. My name is Erin Lundy. I'm the conservation coordinator for mammals and birds and an animal care specialist. And I'm joined by my co-host.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walden. I'm the aquarium's digital content and community manager.
Those are some long titles we have.
Long titles. I like it. And Erin, actually, I have something else you need to add to your title today, and it is sea otter.
Pretender.
Sea otter method actor.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about your day today?
Of course. So today has been a little bit of a hectic day, and we'll get into sort of all the exciting things that have been happening here at the aquarium today. But we also performed an animal escape drill this morning. That is something we need to do annually to maintain our AZA accreditation. We are accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is an agency that makes sure that there are certain standards being upheld, making sure animal welfare is really good, that there is education and conservation, and basically a list of criteria that says, hey, this institution deserves this accreditation. So part of it is that we have to do animal escape drills on an annual basis. And for me, I got to pretend to be the escaped animal today. And as Madeline
very fitting.
I was a sea otter method actor, and it was actually a lot of fun. So essentially, I quote-unquote escaped from a habitat and was quote-unquote seen by
spotted
one of our staff, who then call and say, hey, this is a drill, but I've just seen a sea otter escape from their habitat. This is where they are. And all of the appropriate staff come to respond, and it's a really cool multi-departmental effort to recapture me, the sea otter. And although it is very unlikely that anything like that would ever happen, it's really important for us to always be prepared for any type of emergency. So having people on site who are trained to respond to that is critical. And it was actually really fun to pretend to be a sea otter. Turns out you can be whatever you want to be when you are the escaped animal. You can run around. There's no rules. You can hiss at your coworkers, which is generally frowned upon. I refrain from biting, thankfully, this time. You never know about next time.
That's different from your day-to-day.
Oh, you mean restraint? I refrained. I had to sign that paperwork that said I'm not doing that anymore. But it was really fun, and it culminated in me being captured in a net and transported, quote-unquote, back to my habitat. So it was a great thing to practice and sort of a really fun team bonding experience. We have people from the education department explaining what exactly is going on to our guests who just see me running around with a marker and hissing at people. I promise I'm normal. This is part of professional occupation. And then we have people from our security department who would, quote unquote, secure the perimeter and would do that in the case of a real escape. So we practice everything as if it's real just so that everyone's prepared.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun, to be honest. So that was the morning. And the other thing that's been going on today, which is equally exciting, if not more exciting, to be honest, is that today we launched the aquarium's 25th anniversary event.
That's true. So today we had our press event. It's been a long day. It's been a very fun day, though. We had our press event this morning, our podcast record now, and then this evening we have our VIP kickoff as well. So we're kicking off our 25th anniversary celebration. That includes a reimagined gallery that's opening July 1st. And we're talking, in case you're listening in the future, we're talking about July 1st, 2023.
Which gallery is being renovated?
So we have reimagined our Southern California gallery, and I'm really excited to see how it's coming together. It's going to be a beautiful new space. I think our guests will really, really like it.
That space hasn't been renovated since the aquarium opened either. Mm-hmm. So that'll be really cool to see what they are doing. And I know our life support department and facilities and really all of the aquarists who are involved in that have been working really hard to put something together. And it's cool. I mean, certainly we hear a lot of construction day to day. Sometimes I poke my head in there. I'm like, how's it all looking in there? And it looks rad.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So if you guys are ever here, or if you're here later this year in 2023, please walk through that space. It's all being totally updated, reimagined, should have some really innovative exhibits as well, which is cool to see. And I'm really happy that we have that going on. It's going to be awesome. Speaking of a species that doesn't live anywhere near Southern California, today we are going to be talking all about our Magellanic penguins.
That's right.
Our Magellanic penguin habitat is located on the top floor outside, and it is called our June Keys penguin habitat. If you were to visit, you will see all 19 of our beautiful Magellanic penguins that are native to South America, but are very comfortable living here in warm weather. Today, we are going to have on one of our wonderful aviculturists, Ashley Loper, who is going to tell us all about our Magellanic penguins, some of the shenanigans that are apparently
lots of shenanigans going on there,
and a little bit about the soap opera that seems to be happening up at our penguin habitat. So I'm excited.
It is a reality TV show up there.
In the best way.
In the best way.
So we're going to welcome on Ashley. Thank you guys so much for joining us. So today we have the pleasure of speaking to Ashley Loper, who is one of our aviculturists here at the aquarium. Hi, Ashley. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
What is your job title and what do you do here?
Like Erin said, I'm an aviculturist here at the aquarium. So that means I take care of all of the birds. So I'm cross-trained on a little bit of all of them.
A little bit of all of them.
So I am cross-trained in all of the bird sections. So that is lorikeets, penguins, diving birds like the puffins, some of our ambassador species. But I primarily work with the aquatic birds is what we kind of call them. So that would be the penguins, the puffins, and the other diving birds, and then also the waterfowl and shorebirds.
Do you have a favorite species that you work with?
I moved here to this job actually to work with puffins.
Ooh.
Yeah, I worked with penguins at my other job, but I did not have puffins.
Okay, forget the theme of the podcast today. We're talking puffins only. Just kidding. We will have you back on to talk puffins because I think that's an animal that gets forgotten about sometimes.
Yeah. I think so, too. They actually weren't on the website a lot when I was looking at the job where I was like, I don't even know if they have them. And my friend was like, no, they do.
They for sure have puffins. And yeah, our diving bird exhibit is really cool. We have some of our animals have been here since before the aquarium opened in that habitat. So they are charter animals as well. Well, you said that you worked with penguins at your last job. How long have you been working with penguins and why did you get into it?
I've been working with penguins about 6 years, wow. I think, total. And I got into it because I loved birds. I actually went to college knowing I wanted to work with birds. I just didn't know how. And I got my first internship at the Alaska Sea Life Center working with puffins up there in Alaska. And I fell in love with seabirds and aquatic birds. So I ended up kind of shuffling around a couple different jobs, finding exactly where I fit in. And I did education for a little bit before jumping over to penguins once again. And I happened to land at an aquarium that had them. And I learned a lot about them. And I feel like that's a really strong point for me. So I really like working with them.
I think something that people often don't realize is that getting into this field, you sort of, you know, work a couple of different internships or different positions to see what's the right fit. And even if you think, hey, this is the species for me, you might not be right. Like I got hired as a mammal person and now I'm mostly a frog person. And I think that's kind of how it goes in sort of the zoo field.
It's kind of cool. I hear a lot of people, I love to convert non-bird people into bird people. That's like my hobby. Nobody thinks they're going to love birds. I'm like, let me tell you how fun they are.
And I think penguins are sort of a really good transition point because they are a lot like some of our mammal species, even though they are birds. So penguins are pretty great. I used to work a little bit more focused with our penguins and our colony here, and they are wonderful.
At the Aquarium of the Pacific, we have Magellanic penguins. Have you ever worked with a different species of penguin?
I did. So my background was actually with African penguins, which is like the cousin of the Magellanic penguins, sort of. They look very similar and they act pretty similar, but there was a couple differences that I got used to when I transitioned over to Magellanic penguins a little bit more here. For one, I was told Magellanics were nicer, which so far I actually agree with. African penguins are pretty spicy.
I was holding my breath on that one. That was spicy.
Is it true?
Oh, yeah. So far, Magellanic penguins are a little bit nicer as far as penguins go.
It's good to know. We have good penguins.
I think so. So I've been a big fan of working with them. Magellanic penguins also have a migration season, which African penguins did not have.
Oh.
So that was an interesting difference. And behavior,
I figured that was just kind of across the board that they all had similar seasons of life.
Yeah, that was a new mindset for me when I got here and I started hearing people and I was like, well, it might not be that dramatic. And then I saw the behavior change for migration.
Oh, it's
very distinct staying
dramatic.
In the water.
We'll get into that in a little bit.
They're
talking
pretty
about their seasons.
Seasonal animals.
Yeah.
For our penguin colony specifically, how do we have our penguins? Where did they come from and sort of what's the conservation story behind our penguin colony?
That is a good question. So we've got penguins from a couple different places. So some of them came to us from other AZA zoos and aquariums. Some of them were hatched right here at Aquarium of the Pacific. We have a couple of those. And then some of them were wild rescues. So actually in Brazil, there was a mass stranding event a couple years ago, and there was a lot of penguins that washed up and needed rescue. And a few of those were deemed non-releasable. So when that happened, they tried to look for permanent homes for them. And we were able to house a couple of them. So some of our residents here, Robbie, Kate, and Roxy are all rescue penguins from the wild.
That's pretty cool. So we don't really know what their history or their background is, but it seems like they're doing pretty well here. They have families here, which is cool.
They definitely do. I think they've both been parents, or I think Roxy has had a chick, and...
Yeah, Roxy's mom to seven, I think, or she's had a lot of babies.
Wow,
yeah.
I didn't realize it was that many. I knew she had some, but seven.
Prolific mama. Well-represented genetics is what we like to say.
Such a way to say it.
But that's good. That was wild genetics that we didn't have in the population, and now we do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop right there because I think people are going to hear, wait, penguins in Brazil, and then we have penguins here in Long Beach, California. How are we able to have this species of penguin in a warm habitat? I think people always assume penguins cold, freezing ice blocks running around.
That's probably the most common question I get by the exhibit is everybody looks at them and goes, where's the snow and ice? Yeah. Aren't they warm? So that's one of my favorite penguin misconceptions is everybody pictures them all in Antarctica. I think because those are the guys that get the dramatic nature documentary made about them.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to show you the ones in snow and ice.
In the blizzard, like hunkered down.
But there are penguins all over the Southern Hemisphere. So not just in South America, like the Magellanic penguins, but they're in Africa. Like I said, I worked with African penguins. They're in the Galapagos Islands, around Australia and New Zealand. So there are lots of penguin species that actually live in more temperate, warm climates. So Southern California, the climate's not so different from what they would be getting in Brazil.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you know how penguins evolved? What are their sort of closest relatives in the bird world?
Oh, I read about this a couple years ago. You could fact check me on it. I think it's loons.
Oh, that's interesting.
You would think it would be the other seabirds, like the, I don't know, gannets and murres and like alcids, but I think it might be loons.
That's interesting.
I would have to fact check it. That was a while back I read that.
It's cool.
They are loons.
They're a little loony, so.
I know, I can see it for sure.
That's interesting that seemingly like the puffins and the penguins develop very similar coloration of like that black and white on the belly. But
yeah, and it's fun. Puffins kind of fill that niche in the Northern Hemisphere, and then you have penguins in the Southern Hemisphere. But puffins could also fly, so.
Yeah, they win in that regard.
Yeah, penguins cannot.
If anyone was wondering, penguins cannot fly.
Confirmed. You heard it here.
Why do they develop that coloration?
That is actually camouflage, believe it or not. So you don't think of black and white being camouflage and blending in too well. But if you think about their lifestyle, they are swimming a lot out in the ocean, as penguins do. And if there's a predator swimming from below and they happen to look up, they're going to see the white belly of the penguin. So that blends in with the light coming in from above. And then if there's a predator like flying over them, they're going to see the black back, which is going to blend in a little bit more to the water. So that's a type of camouflage called countershading.
Speaking of their predators, what are predators to the Magellanic penguin?
So there are some seals and sea lions that will predate on them. And then on land, they have some of the bigger like birds of prey and seabirds like skuas, which is a crazy kind of seabird. But they will go after them as well, especially for the chicks. And then I read recently pumas actually are a really big problem for Magellanic penguins, which you don't think about.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they do have some predators.
I did not.
Pumas and penguins.
That.
I was surprised by that one too.
A shocking tale.
I think that something people don't always realize is that penguins, at least Magellanic penguins, are incredibly terrestrial for a large portion of the year. And so people don't really think about that, right? Like they are nesting on land.
Yeah. And for those nests, they will sit there in that spot and try to defend them. Sometimes, yeah, that makes them a little bit more vulnerable.
Sorry.
I don't know. There's some penguins I might bet against when it comes to fighting a puma. They can be pretty
scrappy. I've seen Admiral Fancy Pants.
You'd be surprised.
Yep. He's tough. He could hold his own. Mm-hmm.
So now that we've talked a little bit, we do have a penguin named Admiral Fancy Pants. That might be the best name
I think it's one of the best names ever.
But they all do have pretty individualistic personalities, right? They each have their own likes and dislikes.
You wouldn't think so, but they definitely all have very individual personalities. And it can come down to as specific as food preferences. So there are some that might eat only a certain type of fish. And not only that, but some of them you have to hold that fish a very particular way or they will not take it from you. So they are definitely quirky little animals.
Eat it at 72 degrees.
Exactly.
Needs to be held at
a 45 degree angle. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling I know which penguin you're referring to.
I believe you do. So
who also has an interesting name, right?
The pickiest penguin, ironically, is named Whatever, but she does not eat Whatever. She eats one type of fish, and you have to hold it very specifically.
Okay, we need to talk about Whatever's naming story. Do you know her naming story?
I don't know her naming story.
Oh, well, Madeline.
Oh, I know.
Well, yeah, how do you know?
Hello, I'm the teacher. I have to shout out to our past TikTok lives. I've been able to learn a lot about our animals. But Whatever was named, she came from a different another AZA-accredited facility, and they had had so many chicks that year that they literally said, just name her whatever, and they took that very literally.
I always wondered if that's what happened. Like, yeah. I imagined that scenario, and I just never had it confirmed.
And she's currently our oldest penguin?
Yeah, she is our oldest penguin. Yeah. I think she's 22, going on 23 very soon, I think by the end of the month or in early June.
How long do they live, typically?
So out in the wild, like 15 years would be average or getting up there in age. In zoos and aquariums, I have worked with penguins as old as 37, and I believe there's some in their 40s.
Wow.
So I think that speaks, very highly to the care that they get here.
Sure. What types of symptoms of being geriatric will they develop?
It's a lot like things people will develop. And if you have aging pets, it's very similar. So you'll start to see cataracts sometimes as they age. Also, arthritis is a big one that we watch for. So you'll start to notice them not moving around as easily or being a little bit more stiff.
Penguin arthritis.
I actually worked with a penguin that got acupuncture for arthritis. Isn't that crazy? And I was not necessarily a believer, but I saw a difference.
You see a difference?
In this penguin. Yeah.
Whoa, that's so cool.
Right?
So,
I've never had acupuncture. I want our penguin come in and get it.
I'm going to try acupuncture.
I always laugh at how much better our animals sometimes get treated than, like, the people are like, yeah, I've never eaten food this expensive in my life or had acupuncture and all of these specific doctor
fresh
visits.
Grade A seafood every
That's
day.
That's, like, the number one comment we get on our TikToks of penguin physical exams. Like, wow, this penguin has better health care than I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, well, we can talk a little bit about that health care and sort of what goes into, you know, the husbandry and overall care of our penguins. What does a day in the life of a penguin caretaker look like?
It's a lot of cleaning. They poop a lot. So it is a lot of cleaning, starting off in the morning, trying to get everything ready. We are scrubbing the habitat. We are vacuuming if we need to, because they have a lot of little rocks on their habitat right now, especially nesting. So we sometimes have to vacuum those up. It's going in and checking on everybody. Right now we're feeding them 2 times a day, but if we see their appetite really increase, sometimes we'll feed them up to 3 times a day. And it is hand feeding every single individual penguin, which helps us monitor how much that they are eating. So we do that 2 times a day as well.
What about like a veterinary exam? How might you go about that?
Veterinary, yeah. So they all have annual physicals every single year. So just like you might take your dog or cat to the vet, we take our penguins to the vet. And we're lucky enough that we have a veterinarian, 2 veterinarians that work full-time right here on site that we are able to take those birds to. So we will schedule that. We'll get everybody to go in. They get listened to. So they check their heart, their lungs. They check their feet to make sure there's no sores or anything. They'll check their eyes, inside their mouth. I mean, it's really thorough. And then they also get full blood work done as well to make sure there's nothing else going on under that we can't find.
Okay, we talked a little bit about what they eat at our aquarium, but something that I want to talk about is their mouths and how terrifying they are. It is so scary the way a penguin's mouth looks.
Yeah, if you've never seen it, Google it.
Right now.
We'll definitely attach a video in the show notes, too, so you can check it out.
Yes, it is pretty crazy. So they actually have these fleshy little, I'm going to call them spikes. I feel like that's the most accurate.
They are spiky.
Picture. Yeah. Spiky.
Terrifying.
Fancy name for them is its papillae.
Okay.
Papillae.
But they are texturized on the roof of their mouth and also their tongue, so kind of spikes above and below. But it's because they're eating fish, and fish are very, very slippery. If you've ever tried fishing or holding fish, you know that. I drop them more than I like to admit.
And those are frozen fish.
Right. Those are not even live wiggling fish. So penguins out in the ocean would be fishing for those live fish and trying to catch them. And those papillae just give some extra texture and help them hang on to and grip those fish.
Because they're swallowing them whole, right? They're not chewing those
fish. Yeah, and it's impressive. So they do swallow all of their food whole. They don't tear it up like birds of prey. And they are able to eat something about the same size as their wing, and they swallow it completely whole.
Whoa, I didn't realize it was that big. Wow.
Yeah, there are some where I take out a big herring and I go, oh, there's no way. And then they will, and they make it look easy. They'll like eat it like it's nothing.
I think my favorite thing when they eat like a really big fish is they get these weird little shakes after.
I call it the trash compactor. Because it looks like they eat a lot, and then they put their neck, like, they compress it down in their body, and it's like they're squishing everything down. So even some of my volunteers have started saying, oh, the trash compactor is happening. So
that's
incredible.
That's a really good way to describe it. What kinds of fish are penguins typically eating?
So here we feed them 2 types of fish as the main part of their diet. So they get capelin and herring, but we're also able to throw some extra stuff in there every now and then for variety. So sometimes we'll feed squid, which is not always a favorite, but some of them will
feed
it. Kind
of learning that across the board with some animal, with our animals.
Squid is not popular.
Yeah, no one really
likes
it.
It's like there's animals that really love squid so much that they swallow it whole, and some that don't like it at all, and they maybe put up a little bit of a
Yeah, they might take it and spit it out or something like that. Recently, we also tried a little fish called night smelt, which, again, was not very popular. We had some that didn't seem to care. They would eat anything. And then we had some that would absolutely not eat it.
Whatever.
Or that would take it and walk away. Yeah, whatever. And it looks so similar to the capelin, but somehow they are able to tell it apart. They know.
Yeah, like, how does your beak feel the difference? Like, what is different about this that you know?
How's their sense of smell?
They, thankfully, good for them, do not have a great sense of smell.
Yeah,
because they are kind of stinky.
Yeah,
good for them. So, they are a little stinky. I can attest to that.
Well, what is their natural habitat? It's all poop, right?
Yeah, they actually nest and dig in poop, and they live in, you know, colonies of 200,000 individuals. Mm-hmm. So they're pooping all the time, and it does not smell great. So they don't. That's not one of their stronger senses, is their sense of smell. And that's probably a good thing for them.
Let's talk a little bit about their habitat here at the aquarium. So they are not living in their poop here at the
aquarium.
They
are not. No.
Let's talk about their habitat.
Daily. Yeah. So every single morning it's a full scrub down. Mm-hmm. And we also hose in the PM as well. Mm-hmm. So they are not living in their poop here.
And what about those holes on the habitat? Where do those lead to?
It's a lot of fun. So those are their nesting burrows. So if you see them going and hanging out in front of those, mm-hmm. or going into them, it leads behind the scenes through a little tunnel into a kennel. So we actually have kind of like, it is a dog kennel. Not kind of like a dog kennel. They have dog kennels back there that we have kind of modified for our birds. We have substrate in there, and they are able to come back behind the scenes and nest, and then we're able to use the kennel door and peek at them if we need to and feed and do any sort of maintenance.
I think it's pretty interesting. You think of birds typically as like, I like big open spaces, but a penguin is creating this little hole and would like burrow in it. Like, that seems so
they would contrary. And they will, if they will find little spaces that look like holes, like if you have anything vaguely around, mm-hmm. like a jacket that's kind of propped up, they're like, can I go in here?
If I fit, I sit.
It's very similar, where they're like, is this a burrow? Is that for me?
I could go
so
right in
that
there.
Instinct is pretty strong. So in the wild, they would nest maybe under plants and under bushes. They like to feel pretty confined, but they will also just totally dig a burrow.
That's so crazy. Digging birds.
Mm-hmm. Who knew?
Who knew?
I dig those birds.
I dig those birds. They're all right.
So speaking of those nest boxes, we have several penguin pairs in our habitat. Do they mate for life, or... Are they monogamous?
The monogam-ish is a good way to put it. I say that they are monogamous in the same way sometimes humans are monogamous.
Got it.
Sometimes you stay together for life and things are great, and then sometimes it doesn't work out and you go your separate ways and try again with someone new. So we do have that happen. So again, I've worked with penguins that have been together 20 plus years with the same individual. Aww. Right? Good love story.
And then some bad love story.
Yeah, and then I've had some drama and some that like to shop around a little bit more before they settle down.
You look good for them. Good for them. I always recommend that. Chop around a little bit.
Yeah. Date whatever penguins you feel like you should
but
be
But for the most part, they do tend to stay with the same partner. They'll come back year after year. I think it's like an 80% fidelity rate for some species.
Wow.
So 80% of them will stay together depending on the species.
That might be better than some people.
I think it is better than people.
It is. So, sure.
Now I'm imagining the year of the penguin, and we'll talk a little bit about seasonality for these animals, but they are coming back to the same mate year after year, but that's following migration, right?
Like, right.
So how do they find each other?
They, I think, say same time next year.
But
so they don't necessarily stay together out in the ocean either.
Oh, wow.
So they will
They're not
separate.
Traveling together necessarily.
No, not necessarily.
We'll see you next year.
Right, so like same time next year.
See
and
ya,
they
babe.
Also return to the same burrow generally year after year. So that is time and a place. Mm-hmm. Breeding season. Mm-hmm. This burrow. Catch you next year.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. See you next year after I'm done migrating. Do you think that there is evidence of potentially recognizing each other by how they look? Or how can they, in a colony of 200,000 penguins, how do you find your loved one?
So I do think they can tell each other apart visually. There are some that definitely seem to have beef with one another and can tell each other
visual
apart.
Visual beef.
Yeah. But they also know their mates. And then audibly, they could tell each other apart, too, by vocalizations, which is pretty crazy. And I've seen it in action. I've seen a bird... not be visible to another one. So it could be behind a door or just around a corner in the habitat, and they'll actually call out to their mate, and their mate will swim over and walk over to where their mate is calling for them.
Excuse me, where's my wife?
Exactly. And they know the voice, and they will respond to it, and they'll start looking around for their mate. So
that's
a really crazy way they tell each other apart is by their voice.
Kind of romantic.
I know. I don't know if I can tell some of my friends apart by their voice.
No, probably not.
Some of them, yes. I don't know. I guess on the radios, we tell each other apart pretty
That's
good.
That's true. That's
yeah,
very true.
Yeah. Maybe I'm selling us short.
So that all sounds very sweet, and we know how adorable the penguin is. But I guess there's two kind of terrifying things about them. It's their mouths and also their honking their actual vocalization. It's not necessarily scary, but I think it's so unexpected.
It is not what you would expect.
Ashley, what does a penguin sound like?
I've heard Aaron has a really good penguin impression.
Oh, no. I heard Scott does.
It's pretty good.
I hope he's that was cut that out. Better keep that in there.
This is my impression of two penguins jousting. We'll see how that came through.
It's pretty part-time accurate. Foley artist.
Yeah, I'm a penguin foley artist exclusively.
Specifically.
And now, Madeline, what does their honk sound like?
Honk.
Honk. And now, Ashley, the professional. Scott's just foley playing it now.
That's what they sound like.
So they sound, yeah.
That's what they sound like.
They sound like a donkey. Yeah, that's the description I hear a lot.
Yeah.
So it's very much like a donkey braying. I will not make you listen to me do that. But they do have another call that I really like. And it's more of a, ooh.
Aww.
And that's, Aaron calls it Penguin Marco Polo. So that's kind of their way of saying, where are you? Ooh. I'm over here. So they'll just give a little, ooh, to locate each other sometimes. And it's very cute.
So sweet.
I'm sure that that's really important if they got separated out migrating so that they're not just one penguin all by themselves. I've heard it called a contact call also.
Yeah.
And that low frequency carries a lot further over a long distance so that if they're on the ocean, like, uh-oh.
Right, right. Think about you're coming in after a successful day of hunting for fish and you're walking through a colony of 200,000 penguins and you gotta find your penguin.
Hello. Anybody out there? It is definitely not the noise you expect to come from
a cute little penguin.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is not. And they will all be out there doing that at the same time some days. You can't even hear yourself think because it is just like being surrounded by very loud donkeys.
They're having a conversation, Ashley. You just don't understand what they're saying. Can you tell them apart by their vocalizations?
I like to pretend that I can. I'm not great at it sometimes, but sometimes we'll be around the corner and we'll hear them and we're like, oh, I bet that's this one or something like that. And sometimes we get it. Sometimes they're pretty good, but not all the time. I'm not as good as a penguin is about telling other penguins.
Well, we have help telling them apart, right? We have each of our penguins is wearing a cute little bracelet on their flipper called their bead band. And can you tell us a little bit about why that might be?
Yeah, it is stylish and functional. So that is the way we tell them apart. So everybody's got their own unique color combination on there. And we actually have ladies banded on the left and the males banded on the right-hand side. And that's one of the ways to ID them. So they do look very similar. I don't know if you've noticed, but they are all black and white. So it can be pretty tricky to tell them apart. So those little bead bands are very helpful, especially when you're learning the penguins. But then if you are in there every single day and you're seeing them, I really don't even use the bands that much anymore because you'll start to notice very distinct facial features that they have. Like some of them have more white cheeks than other ones. Mm. There are some that have very like reddish colored eyes compared to the others and stuff like that. So you start to rely on that. Another cool thing is they all have their own unique speckle pattern on their belly. So that's kind of like the penguin version of a fingerprint, and it stays the same year after year, even when they shed their feathers. So you can tell them apart without using the bands if you really sit there and study them.
Which you have, I'm guessing.
All the time.
Who is the prettiest penguin? Answer right now. Go.
You know, I know the
answer. Oh, that's really hard. I think Kate is very pretty.
She is.
I think she has a really pretty penguin face.
I would
agree
with that.
Aaron, who's
Kate
your...
Kate is the prettiest penguin.
Really? I thought it was
Paddles.
Paddles
is the cutest penguin. Oh,
different. You're right. They are different.
Paddles is very cute, but Kate is pretty.
That's pretty interesting to think that we can tell them apart by sort of their facial features if you get familiar enough. And I imagine it's like having 100 of the same dog species or dog breed,
right?
You can tell them apart because it makes sense to you. That one's slightly browner than the other.
Yeah, or this one where I'm like, well, her beak is slightly smaller and her head looks tiny compared to her body. Or some of them have like stubby legs.
Well, sometimes we don't have those bead bands on, right? Because they are very seasonal animals. And you mentioned molting. And during that molt, we take off their bead bands. Why is that?
So molting is playing on expert mode when it comes to telling them apart because it gets very difficult. But when they molt, it's a very dramatic process. So they actually lose most of their feathers all at the same time within the span of about 2 weeks. So it's called a catastrophic molt. And it looks very catastrophic when it's happening because they are just sloughing feathers. It looks like a penguin pillow fight out there on the penguin exhibit all the time. We've got a bunch of featherless penguins walking around. It's very ridiculous. But before that goes on, they tend to bulk up and build up a lot of body fat. So that bracelet could get a little bit too tight if we leave it on there. So we will take it off just to make that process a little bit more comfortable because it doesn't look like a comfortable process already. So between the bulking and the shedding feathers, we just want to take that bracelet off and give them time to go ahead and shed and get that process over with.
Yeah, it's a rough season for them.
It looks pretty miserable.
Now we have to put a sign out every single year, too, kind of explaining why they look like that.
Like, because this is normal.
Right. Everybody thinks they're sick because they're just sitting there with no feathers, like, looking miserable.
The name Catastrophic Molt, definitely.
It's a catastrophe.
It is a catastrophe. But it's natural, and it happens to them every single year.
It is natural.
I love that penguins have normal plumage that's in their winter and migration, and then breeding plumage, which is just a very slight change to their face. You haven't noticed?
It is pretty cool. So when they first molt, they actually will keep little tiny feathers on their face, and they start to lose them in the breeding season, so mm-hmm. their face goes bare. And it kind of coincides with breeding season and summer, because mm-hmm. that's one of the ways they lose heat, is by air coming across mm-hmm. the bare patches on their face. So it freshens up. They look a little bit more fresh and have their makeup on,
I guess.
You'll start to see that change, yeah.
I've heard that they are prone to specific penguin fleas and ticks that can cause anemia. And so having a little, like, rosy blush means that you probably don't have as many parasites as another penguin. So you're a healthier mate option for breeding season.
Wow, that's so attractive. Wow.
Fascinating.
You have fewer ticks than your friends.
You're the one for me.
It is a cute little blush that they get, though.
That's adorable.
Breeding plumage. Just less feathers.
Slightly less feathers.
I thought it would be the
face.
Opposite. It's almost like they had, like, their eyelashes done and, like...
We'll save that for the puffins. Yeah. They kind of do that one.
Oh, boy. We are going to talk about puffin plumage.
We'll do puffins next season, for sure.
We definitely will. Mm-hmm. Well, something that the guests who might come to the aquarium might see with our penguin habitat is that we've recently remodeled. And if you haven't been here since last year, and our penguins were for a little bit behind the scenes due to avian influenza, but they are now back on the habitat with a newly remodeled habitat. So what did we do? What did we change?
We changed a couple things out there, but the really big one is we added a lot of river rock substrate.
It looks amazing.
It looks really nice mm-hmm. out there. It's been fun watching the penguins get used to it because it does wobble and move a little bit more. So they're kind of figuring that out, and that's new, but it is also very good for them. So the whole reason we switched that substrate was to help with foot health. By having their feet be in different positions, those rocks move, so it's never that they're going to be sitting in the same spot with their feet in exactly the same position, because you can start to have sores develop as that happens. It's also good for building muscle and stuff like that, too, and keeping them a little bit more healthy and mobile as they age.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
I think so, too. It's very, very fun out there.
It's a little bit more naturalistic looking.
I was going to say, does that kind of mimic their natural habitat?
A little bit. I think it would be like smaller rocks and maybe a little bit more dirt, not so much that rock stacked on top of rock. Mm-hmm. But it is really good for them. It also helps with drainage, so we're not having water just sit there and they're standing in puddles. It kind of keeps them elevated a little bit more, which is helpful for their foot, too.
So it's just overall a really good welfare change in addition to being good aesthetics for the habitat.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I like seeing changes that benefit the animals. You know, like, I like that we think that way, and we're like, hey, how can we help the penguins while they're off habitat? Just fix the whole habitat to be more rocks and
more
things.
Yeah, and that is only the changes that you can see. We are also working behind the scenes trying to update some things as well. We're looking at how we could revamp our nesting box setup and stuff like that, too.
That's exciting.
I think so. It's kind of a cool time to be here.
Very cool.
Well, kind of blending right into nesting and some of the behaviors that our penguins are showing, one of our social media questions for you today is that we've heard that there are quite a few shenanigans that happen up in the penguin habitat. So what are your favorite stories and sort of what's the tea? What's going on up there?
There are definitely penguin shenanigans. I have all the tea. We very frequently sit in our staff office and we give everybody the lowdown on all the penguin stuff that's happening.
It's never a dull moment,
it's
right?
So exciting.
It really isn't. Mm-hmm. So I jokingly call it the young and the nestless. That is my little penguin soap opera out there.
It is.
So to update you on some of the happenings just this season. This is just this season. Oh, wow. This isn't even year after year.
This is season 12 of the young and the nestless.
This season on the young and the nestless. We had a penguin leave her mate for the neighbor.
Who? That's exciting.
Yeah, so this season we had a bird named Heidi and Anderson, and they were together. And then Heidi left Anderson for the neighbor, Wally. Wally was previously a single young man. So now Wally and Heidi are together, and they still live next door.
Oh, awkward. Right? That's rough.
But Anderson was not left alone.
Who's he with?
So we had quite the shakeup. So we had another pair that was Patsy and Gats. And Gats was a little bit more interested in people and doing his own thing. And he was late to the game building a nest. He was not interested. So Patsy left him.
Oh,
it was rough. He didn't seem bothered. But poor Patsy was looking around for
any guy. Oh. And she went and kind of inserted herself with Anderson.
Okay. She was so, like, you have a nest.
Yeah, she's like, you have a nest, I guess.
You know what you're doing.
So she would crawl into the nest. And at first, he was kind of mean to her. He would peck at her. Aww. And stuff like that.
Anderson.
Yeah, and she was just kind of feeling, okay, well, I'm going to be here. And I think this is kind of sad setting. I think they settled for each other. And they're still together, and he is being a lot nicer to her now.
That's amazing.
But it was not love at first sight on this one, I think. And then Gats was left to be our single male on Habitat this year because we do not have equal males and females. There is one more male, and it is Gats.
He's alone. Do you want to know the twist ending? Is that Anderson, Wally, and Gats are all brothers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. This actually
That's
does
a
sound like...
It really is a full soap opera.
It is a soap opera.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
That's amazing.
This is amazing.
That's the tea.
That is a lot of tea.
And that's just this season.
That is just this season. That's stuff like that happens every season. They will oust each other from nests. Sometimes they might want their neighbor's nest. Sometimes they leave each other. It is always drama.
I don't know if we mentioned it yet. How many penguins do we have?
We have 19 penguins out there.
So we got one single male.
One single male.
And it's been Gats this season. Last year it was Wally, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So with Gats this year, what's he been up to without a girlfriend?
He is now single and very ready to mingle.
He's gone late.
Yeah, he was very late to the game. So he worked very diligently collecting a lot of nesting material. So we give them palm fronds here that we cut off of palm trees, and we sanitize them many, many, many times and then give them to the penguins. And Gats would come and just gather mouthfuls of them and carry them in. And then one day I actually looked at his nest box and there was no palm fronds in there.
What happened? Sabotage.
While Gats was out for a swim, his neighbor stole from him.
The neighbor that stole his wife?
Thankfully, it wasn't. That's
okay,
too much.
Different neighbor. That would be too much betrayal. Yeah.
He lost his wife and he got robbed.
Oh, no. That's a bad season.
He had a home invasion.
It's very dramatic.
So if there are two penguins together, one's typically guarding the nest and the other one is sort of out
there. They kind of take shifts, so they both do take turns, like taking care of sitting on the egg, taking care of the chick. So usually, one will be on nest duty and the other will go look for food and take their swim time. Some of them are better mates than others. Some of them
Anderson.
I wasn't going to name names.
Couples therapy for sure.
Poor Patsy. My goodness.
I know. She got like two breaks this whole nesting season. I was like, go Patsy, go swim.
Anderson's like, you do all the egg work.
I'm just going to guard. He takes that guarding job very seriously.
It's funny to think that they each can be problematic in their own ways and that different penguins are problematic year to year. Mm-hmm. When you said that Gats was a little bit more interested in people, do you mean that he's friendly with people, or is it something different?
It is a little bit of both. Mm. So sometimes it's friendly, but sometimes he gets a little bit too excited, and he thinks people are his mates, and that is not something that we want to encourage. Mm-hmm. So usually that's, okay, we're done interacting right now, because we do want Gats to know he's a penguin and to eventually find a penguin love.
But not Patsy. But not Patsy. Mm-mm. Patsy betrayed him. Who stole his stuff?
I think Mattson did.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Mattson had a lot of palm fronds in that nest.
Too many.
So many.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, no, these are mine. Worked really hard to get
them.
Isn't
that weird? Me and my wife Lily did this. I have no idea what you are talking about. That's hilarious. So when the males typically are gathering the nesting material, or is it sort of equal opportunity?
It tends to be the males. Yeah, the males will go out and gather a lot of palm fronds. It's really funny. We usually keep the palm fronds in a white bucket, and all we have to do is carry a white bucket. It could have anything
it's
in it.
Time.
I was getting one to clean rocks for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was putting them in the white bucket, and they would all come up and go, palm fronds? And they'd all just stare at me like, give us palm fronds.
This is the bucket. I know
it's the white bucket.
It's a white bucket.
My girlfriend really wants some more palm fronds. Just give me the fronds. So when they are gathering, do they ever gather, like, other pieces of furniture to put in, or is it typically just the fronds and sticks and things like that?
It's funny you say that. Just this morning, I found a white towel that had been left somewhere a penguin could grab it, and it was in somebody's nest box.
That's so funny.
So they absolutely will gather other things. So I've seen them grab brushes when I'm out trying to clean and carry those into their burrow as well. Erin has a really good story about something that was taken from her.
I used to have my ID badge that was right on my keychain, and there was a day that I was out in penguins, and I don't know if I was cleaning or I was, doing an encounter or what, but I just remember Fisher coming up, seeing my keys and my ID badge, and just deciding that my ID badge would be a really wonderful addition to his nest, and he fully pulled it off my keychain and just brought it in. So at one point, point, Fisher said, I'm Aaron Lundy, so.
He wanted a picture of you inside of the habitat.
Identity theft is not a joke, Fisher. So it's anything that they can get their grubby little beaks on, I guess.
They have gone for my camera strap before, too. Like, I have, like, my actual camera strap. Or even just, like, you know, sometimes I'm wearing a jacket or something that has, you know, something hanging off of it.
They try to steal my keys all the time. Yeah. Shoelaces. I've had them untie my shoes before.
They're like, really, this would look good in my house.
I think this is it. This is what we're missing.
I think Fisher wanted a picture of you in his home.
He just frames it, and it's... No, it was covered. It definitely had poop on it when I got it, so I don't think it was a nice thing.
Oh, no.
Maybe it was revenge. Which is funny. He's one of my favorite penguins, but after that, I don't know.
Oh, are we?
Are we friends, or is this some sort of weird, evil thing that you're doing, Fisher? That is too funny. Well, we do have some other questions from social media.
This is a very fun episode. Yeah, I think these penguin shenanigans, there's always so much that we could talk about.
And The Young and the Nestless is my new favorite soap opera that I will definitely tune into. If you do want to see The Young and the Nestless, you can come see our penguins at our Magellanic Penguin Habitat. It's on the second floor outside. It's on the third floor outside. And you can usually see most of our penguins out interacting. You can tell them all apart by third their bead floor. Bands. We have three floors.
Yeah. The elevator is weird. It has that like half floor. And that's true. Two.
I think we should say second though.
It is on the top floor outside.
There.
Perfect.
Our penguin habitat is on the top floor outside. And if you want to identify all of the major actors and actresses in The Young and the Nestless, we do have a cute little sign that actually has everyone's bead colors. And you can tell who's who and who is causing what drama.
The best reality TV show of all time.
It's pretty great. Sometimes I just sit and watch, and it's a lot. But anyway, some of our other social media questions are, how many species of penguins are there, and what are the biggest and smallest species?
That is, for how many species, that's actually kind of a debated topic among the penguin scientists of the world. So there's not always agreement in science on how to classify those, but I go by 18. So I say there's 18 different penguin species that
17.
Are out there. Well, we can fight. No, we're just kidding. And that's just some people group certain ones together and like subspecies and stuff like that. So I say that there are 18 species. And the smallest is going to be the little blue penguin or the fairy penguin.
That's a cute name for
them. And then the largest is the emperor penguin.
That's also a cute name for them.
How large are the emperor penguins?
I think they're like 3 feet, maybe even larger than that, maybe like in the 3 to 4 range.
And how big are our penguins?
Probably about like 2 feet, 2.5.
They're big, but not that
some
big.
Some are bigger than others.
Looking at you, Gats, again.
I need to take out the little measuring tape and see. Or we could have on the door, like, little, how tall are they?
Oh, we need that. We need to make that, absolutely. Well, I think it's funny because I believe the tallest penguin and the shortest penguin are a pair. Is that right?
Not...
Shim
depends on the neck length.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It does. I think Patsy and whatever are pretty equally matched. Okay. Actually, I think Patsy might be tinier.
I think whatever just hunches.
Yeah, so too. She walks like a little goblin.
Yeah,
she's like, I'm 23 years old. You know?
But Shim is definitely one of our larger ones. He's very tall.
He is tall.
Yeah, and Robbie's another one of our really big boys.
Robbie's so handsome.
He is. He and Kate are a pair. So our two most like beautiful,
gorgeous
model penguins are a pair.
They are really cute together.
They're beautiful. They're that couple.
They're that couple, yeah.
Everyone wants to be Robbie and Kate. The two rescued penguins from Brazil, they found each other here at the aquarium. How
and
crazy.
Now they live in L.A.?
Wow, Hollywood, here they come.
Model penguins. They should be on TV. They're pretty great.
They really should. I think that's what we're gathering here, is that they need
I
a TV
so.
Show.
Honestly.
So if you're listening.
And you produce.
And you can make a TV show.
About penguins.
Reach out.
And if you need help telling them apart, Ashley's really good at that. So it works out. We also have a question. I'm wondering, are penguins friendly or feisty?
I think it depends on the penguin. So a little bit of both. They're like cats. So they'll turn around and be like, okay, that's enough. So the answer is it kind of depends. We do have some that are very affectionate towards people that are very used to being handled. And then we have some that do not like to be handled and prefer a more hands-off approach.
It's good to know.
Who is the most mischievous penguin?
I think it's a toss-up. So the two that I feel like I have getting into shenanigans the most are going to be Gats and Wally. And I think they're mischievous in the way that, like, it feels like having a bunch of, like, toddlers running around sometimes, where if you leave something out, they're going to come over and they're going to touch it and they're going to pick it up. You put a mat down on the floor, they're going to tear it up. And I'm like, can you just stop touching things for, like, 5 seconds?
What's
just
this?
Leave
What's
it
this?
Alone.
Oh, my goodness. It is like having a bunch of children around, isn't it?
It's chaos sometimes. But the cutest kind.
It is cute. And they're not extremely mobile. We talked a little bit earlier about doing an animal escape drill. If a penguin were to somehow escape, how would you recapture it?
I think we would just try to corral it a little bit and then scoop them on up and put them back.
You can carry them. They're usually pretty amenable to being handled. At least most of them are.
Yeah, most of them are pretty used to being picked up and carried. So you could just scoop them on up and carry them back.
Welcome home. That's awesome.
Nice try.
Well, they're not fast on land, and that kind of leads us to our next question.
Yeah, I think a very interesting question that we get asked a lot is, do they have knees?
We get asked that a lot.
Yeah, we do. We do, actually.
I have been asked that more times than you would expect in my time as a penguin keeper. And the answer is yes. Penguins do have knees. If you look at an x-ray, it's kind of weird. It almost looks like they're sitting, like, squatted because their knees are up in their little body. So look up a penguin x-ray. It's pretty crazy. But knees confirmed.
Knees confirmed.
It makes me wonder how accurate our dinosaur depictions are sometimes. When you look at a penguin that looks like a very long-necked bird squatting, you're like, oh, cool. That's how they're squatting.
Oh, my goodness. If you look at their necks, like the skeleton of their neck, too, it is way longer than you expect. And they could really stretch that neck out.
It's funny to
see. When they need to. It's pretty drastic. They're hiding all sorts of little secrets in there.
Those little dinosaurs.
They're full of secrets. How long does it take for, we said we've had some chicks here, how long does it take for that baby penguin to grow fully into an adult?
So from when they hatch, usually around 90 days is kind of what I say. So that is growing up, getting past the fluffy phase, losing that baby down and learning to swim. It's about a 90-day process.
Okay.
How long does it take for a penguin egg to hatch once it's been laid to?
Yeah, so if it's going to hatch, usually it's in like the 38 to 42 day range is when we'll see it hatch.
Pretty quick.
That is actually really
it's
fast.
A quick turnaround.
Boom, a penguin. 40
and
days.
You're a parent now.
Is that pretty quick for bird species? Or
some birds hatch like fairly quickly. I think some of the smaller guys hatch even faster than that, like maybe 2 weeks or so. Yeah, and then I would have to look it up. I feel like there was somebody I read recently, one of like the really big birds that
took a long hatch.
Right, that took a long time, but I would have to look it up.
And they always lay two eggs, right?
They do. They lay two, but they don't lay them like one and then another. They lay an egg, and then 4 days later, they lay their second egg.
Do they ever both hatch?
Sometimes they do. Generally, only one tends to hatch or one tends to make it if they both hatch, depending on food supplies. It would have to be, I think, very experienced parents and a lot of resources and plentiful fish out there for them both to make it.
What happens if we are in a breeding season here at the aquarium where we are having penguin chicks and a bird lays two eggs and they're both viable?
So sometimes in that instance, if we have another pair that maybe wasn't successful, we can do foster eggs. So we might be able to take one of the extra eggs and give it to another pair. A lot of times we only like the pair sitting on one at a time because it lets them focus all of their effort on just that one chick, and it increases the chance of success, and it's a little less stressful for the parents.
Two is a lot.
One or twins.
Yeah. All the parents out there nodding.
They're like, twins are a lot. That's awesome.
So sometimes we could pull the second egg, and we just let them focus on the first one, and we could give the second egg to somebody else, or we just don't give it to anybody.
And if we have young penguins that have grown up and are swimming, they're silver in color, right, when they first get that. When they're hatched, they have the funny brown feathers that sort of look like
very
they have
fluffy,
curly hair, and they're very cute. And then they start getting sort of weird looking as that falls out, but then they turn totally silver, and that's not what we typically expect with a penguin. When do they get sort of that very...
Their tuxedos.
Yeah, the tuxedos.
Usually about a year and a half old, so they'll have their first molt about a year and a half, and they get their black and white tuxedos. And it's kind of a fun process. I had a penguin chick where both the parents had what I call the bow tie mark. So they actually had a spot on their neck that looked like a little bow tie.
That's cute.
And we were sitting there anxiously watching, like, is this one going to molt? Is it going to have the bow tie?
Will he have a bow tie?
And we were, like, trying to peek under the feathers as they're, like, She did have a bow tie. It was very exciting.
I wonder, what's bow tie genetics? That's
crazy. It's for the African. So actually, this is a fun African penguin Magellanic crossover. So Magellanic penguins have, they're double banded. So they have two black bands kind of across their chest and neck. African penguins have one, and the bow tie is the remnant of that second band from Magellanic penguin genetics.
Whoa,
yeah, crazy.
That is crazy. Huh. I love that.
Now we know. Bow tie genetics is a real thing.
It's a thing from the Magellanics, so.
They invented the bow tie. Got it.
Another listener wants to know, what do penguins feel like?
Oh, it's so hard to describe. They're incredibly soft.
They're very soft.
Yeah, but also, like, kind of smooth and slick at the same time. So those outer feathers are really soft and fluffy, but also slick because they condition them with, like, a waterproofing oil that they make, which is crazy, too. You just have to come see for yourself sometime.
Kind of unlike anything else, right?
Yeah, it's so hard to describe like that feeling.
Indescribable. Is that helpful for all our listeners out there? Well, where do they get their waterproofing from? Does it just secrete all over their body?
They have a little gland kind of right on top of the base of their tail called the preen gland.
The preen gland.
And a lot of birds have it. So a lot of times you'll see birds when they groom themselves, they reach their head back towards their tail and they'll kind of rub their face on their tail and it looks really weird. But they're getting that oil kind of on their beak and on their face and then they rub their face all over the rest of their feathers and kind of condition them and spread that waterproofing oil all over.
That's crazy. It also looks hilarious.
I'm glad we don't have to do that.
Yeah, right.
What do you mean? You guys don't do that?
Madeline, how flexible are you? That's crazy. I have seen you doing that, but I've always
stay waterproof.
I think my favorite thing about it is that when they molt, you can see it.
Oh, I know. It feels forbidden. I was like, put that away. I'm not supposed to see that.
So it is separate from their cloaca?
Yeah, it is. So the cloaca is like underneath the tail and the little preen gland is actually on the top side.
For our listeners who want to help penguins in the wild, do you have any suggestions on things that they can do in their day-to-day lives to help penguins?
I think one of the best things that we can do for penguins is just to try to buy local and sustainably sourced seafood. Overfishing is one of the biggest problems that they are facing out there in the ocean because they are competing against the commercial fishing industry. Yeah. And some places are really good about regulating that industry and then some places have a little bit of a harder time regulating it. And it's really been a challenge for penguins. So just trying to not be a part of the problem and try to support people who are doing the right thing and having sustainable industries is really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. We'll link some resources in the show notes too for sustainable seafood.
We just want those penguin twins to survive. The more food, the more twins live.
Exactly.
That's all we really want. All right, to last but not least, we have one more question for you.
Do you have a favorite penguin? Oh, maybe this season.
Right, this season. I think that's the hardest question.
Who's the main character?
Oh, who's the main character? I think I really like Robbie. He's stolen my heart. He's such a sweet, like, well-mannered little gentleman.
It's a good choice.
He's very polite. He comes up and he waits for you to give him food, and he takes what he wants, and he'll walk away. Some of the other penguins sit there, and they'll peck at you if you're not fast enough, or they just eat and eat and eat and steal fish from one another. And Robbie's very polite, and he's just a very cute, good boy.
That's a good reason.
We'll make Robbie the cover photo for the podcast.
We should. He's born to be on the cover.
He was. He's very handsome. Well, thank you, Ashley. That was probably one of our more fun episodes.
That was very fun.
We learned a lot about penguin shenanigans here at the aquarium. And if you guys want to come and see the shenanigans in person, please do. They are at our June Keys Magellanic Penguin Habitat. You might see Ashley out there being pecked at or being very politely treated by Robbie when she's doing eating, which would be
depends
lovely.
Depends on the day.
Depends on the penguin, depends on the day. And if you come in the late summer, please do not be alarmed when you see feathers everywhere and pink plucked chickens.
That is normal.
That is normal. Well, thank you again, Ashley. We really appreciate having you on.
Aquarium of the Podcific is brought to you by Aquarium of the Pacific, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. In 2023, the aquarium celebrates 25 years of connecting millions of people worldwide to the beauty and wonder of our ocean planet. Head to aquariumofpacific.org to learn more about our 25th anniversary celebration. Keep up with the aquarium on social media at Aquarium Pacific on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
This podcast is produced by Aaron Lundy, Madeline Walden, and Scott Shaw. Our music is by Andrew Reitzma, and our podcast art is by Brandy Kenny. Special thanks to Cecile Fisher, Anitza Valles, and our audiovisual and education departments, and to all of our amazing podcast guests for taking time out of their day to talk about the important work that they do. Podcific wouldn't be possible without the support of the aquarium's donors, members, guests, and supporters. Thanks for listening.